Hey guys, it's Taylor Armasino. Just at the towards the end, maybe the last 10, 15 minutes of the podcast, Chris, the connection was a little screwy, and so Chris's audio is a bit off. So just bear with us. Thanks. This is the RaidersBlog.com podcast coming to you on a Thursday today. Chris has been a little under the weather this week, so we wanted to give him another day to recover. And, you know, also, we need another day to recover probably from that Sunday game. Oakland lost to Kansas City 24-7. It was a rough game for Pryor in the offense, especially the offensive line. Defense played pretty well, though, but it wasn't enough. Chris, you know, what were your general thoughts from the game? I mean, I guess Pryor would be the focal point here in the offensive line. You know, that was the biggest problem by far. I thought the defense played pretty well. And, you know, really when Kansas City scored, it was coming off, you know, turnovers from the Oakland offense. So, I mean, I think this week the offense was definitely the big issue.
Yeah, I think that's obvious. I mean, when you watch a game live, when you watch it a second time, you see all that. You know, the defense, they proved that, you know, against a below average offense, they can do good things. I mean, I think the defense played really well. They had their back against the wall. Hayden forced the fumble. Woodson recovered it. I mean, they did some good things. You know, I think there's still a defense that's going to be, you know, they could be exploited by a good offense. I still believe that. But I think against average to below average offenses, they've now proven that they can play up to that level. And I also think, you know, there was two fumbles that went out of bounds that they forced. You know, I think one of the big differences in this defense overall is the ability to force turnovers more than anything else. You know, I think their yardage and drive stats are not significantly improved. They're a little improved from last year, but those turnovers, I think, have been a big reason that this defense has played a lot better. And you've got guys on this defense that have proven that they can turn, that, you know, you see Kevin Burnett, you see Woodson, Hayden. These are guys that you know, played on, they know how to force turnovers. I mean, Nick Roach was on the Bears last year, and they forced a ton of turnovers. So this is a group that knows how to force those turnovers. I think that's been a big difference for them, and I think we saw that against Kansas City.
So especially the last 2 weeks, we saw it against San Diego as well.
Yes, we did. We did see it against San Diego as well. So that's I think the defense, if you want to feel good about the defense, I think, you know, the yardage-wise, there's still some work to do in terms of getting everybody on a right note. And this is a defense that, I mean, no matter what you want to make it out to be, it's not a great defense. But it's definitely an improved defense because of that fact, you know, because of the turnover factor. When we come down to it, though, you know, they still need a lot of things. I mean, they still need an elite pass rusher. They're still relying too much on the blitz to generate pressure. And that's part of the feast or famine nature of, well, they're going to allow yards, but they're also going to force turnovers, and that's kind of part of it. You know, obviously, if they get better natural pressure, then, you know, maybe you can force some of those turnovers without as much reliance on the blitz. So, you know, you like to be able to do both things, but you also like to not have to rely on it. And I think that's, you know, defense has been good, and the last 2 weeks we've seen that. But, you know, over following years, we're going to see some of these players be exchanged, replaced with players that are better. And I think especially when you look at that defensive line a little bit, and you look at the linebackers, you know, that's an area where I think, okay, this is where the Raiders could really use an impact player here someplace. And obviously, C. Wood's not going to be around forever, so you're going to need a safety at some point. So there's different things that they're going to need to do. But overall, you have to be pretty pleased with the way the defense has performed, especially recently. I think they've really started to play as a unit. And so that's a positive from the game.
Yeah, and Jason Tarver deserves a lot of credit. I think he's done a really good job. And, you know, especially in that first half of that game, and Kansas City has offensive line issues of their own, but that Raider pass rush, you know, and they're generating with a lot of blitzing and stuff, but that pass rush was really dominant and really manhandled Kansas City's offensive line, especially in the first half of that game.
Yeah, they really did. They played really well. I think I read someplace that last week, outside of Kansas City, who obviously harassed the Raiders, the Raiders actually had the second best pass rush of the week. So, and I wouldn't argue with that. I think they did really well. You know, I think on the first, I think it was kind of in the mood center. You look at C.O. Moore on the first play of the game, pushes Eric Fisher back in the pocket, gets around him, gets a sack. You know, I mean, that was a statement right there. I mean, you look at C.O. Moore starting to come along, and we might talk about him a little bit later. But, you know, overall, I think the defense really starting to play together, starting to Now, like I said, is it going to be an elite defense? Probably not. But if you look at the way that they're playing together, they can be a solid defense. Really, where the Raiders need to improve still is offense. And, I mean, I know Pryor's been the big story, and he's been better than everybody expected. But, you know, that offense is still something that the Raiders really, really, really need to improve on, especially the offensive line. I mean, because you can't really fault the receivers when, you know, Pryor's only able to throw short slants. No one can get open deep. You know, you can't really fault them for poor play when the offense can't block.
Yeah, and, you know, the offensive line, I mean, I think the biggest issue right now is injuries. I mean, that seems obvious. I believe they started the game with almost a whole new different offensive line than what they finished the game with. I mean, and they're already starting with backups. I mean, when you have these many injuries on your offensive line, it's just they're not going to be good. And the guys that are in there haven't been good. It's not like they've gotten, you know, gotten good play from Lucas Nix and guys like that. I mean, the guys they have in there just have not performed well. And that was really... That was a really atrocious game. I mean, Kansas City obviously is probably the best defense in the league. They've got a really good pass rush. It's a tough assignment, but at the same time, they have to be better than that. I mean, they gave up 9 sacks, probably could have been more. It was just a really putrid performance on their part.
Yeah, I think it was actually 10 sacks, but yeah, it was pretty bad. You know, I think, you know, the point that you made was the injuries. And I think that's part of the point that I think Reggie McKenzie even said it before training camp or during training camp. He said that the Raiders couldn't afford injuries. As long as we don't have injuries, we'll be okay, is kind of what he said. But guess what? In this league, injuries happen a lot. It just does. And you're going to get injuries, and you just have to hope they're at positions where, you know, you have some depth. And, you know, the Raiders, being the team that they were, did not have a lot of depth anywhere. You know, they did. I think they did a pretty solid job overall of finding as many quality players to start as they possibly could. Maybe not elite players, but quality players. But then you have an injury, and you're like, "Oh, who do we have?" And you know, this system's only been in place 2 years. I mean, at maximum, you've got a developmental guy behind him. I mean, in the Raiders situation, that's had, you know, a year to kind of learn the system and. And in offense's case, you don't even have that. I mean, you only have 1 year this year, not even a whole year to do that. So I think that's a big factor in what we're talking about here, especially with the offensive line. I mean, this is a new scheme. That's a new offense. And you're talking about very little depth there. So the injuries do become a factor. And I think the biggest one, and we talked about this when it happened, but I think the biggest one was Jared Veldier. Because of what it caused the Raiders to have to do as far as shuffling everybody around. You know,
yeah, absolutely.
Look at it this way. At best, with Veldier's injury, they've got a rookie left tackle.
Right.
Menelik Watson over there. And then they've got Barnes on right tackle. But maybe they never even bring in Tony Pagios, right?
Right.
I mean, and Pagios has been quite, you know, he's been pretty good, especially in pass protection. Maybe not as good in run, but he's been pretty good in pass protection.
I mean, given what I think was expected when they brought him in kind of as an emergency pickup, I mean, he's been as productive as could be expected, if not more.
Yeah, probably one of the better of the five offensive linemen that have played the majority of the snaps. I think him and Brizell have probably been the best. And so if you look at it this way, I mean, the five guys that were starting last or that were playing at the end of the game last week were Khalif Barnes, Lucas Nix, Brizell at center, Lamar Mady at right guard, Matt McCants at right tackle. I mean, Mady and McCants were on the practice squad a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that's not to say they can't come in and be productive, but they were on the Raiders practice squad. They weren't even on the 53-man roster. These are not even guys that could make the 53-man roster in Oakland, which is, frankly, especially at offensive line, was probably one of the easiest places to make the team.
Right.
And they didn't. So, you know, you look at that and you look at, okay, so these obviously some quality. Brizell hadn't played center since NFL Europe. Lucas Nix has been quite possibly one of the worst guards in the entire league, and we might talk about him a little bit more later, too. And then Barnes, you know, he's done decently well this year, but he, you know, against Tom Bahaly, who's quite possibly a Defensive Player of the Year candidate, you know, on the left side, which, you know, until this year, Barnes hadn't started a game on the left side since, like, 2008, I believe it was. And you look at that offensive line, and you're just like, this is one of the worst offensive lines ever. It's just horrible. I mean, there's no way to put it, there's no way to sugarcoat it. That's just a horrible five offensive line. Right. Now, injuries have played a part in that, obviously, because you've got, you know, Wisniewski went down, then you had Gerard went down, and then you, obviously Velier was already down.
And Menelik Watson as well.
And then Menelik Watson was down. Yeah, I mean, you've got issues, don't get me wrong, with injuries. But that offensive line was just not talented enough. You know, it's not talented enough to really hold its own, especially against a front seven that, you know, the Chiefs have been playing 2000 Ravens level defense right now. I mean, that's really where they're at.
No, they're great.
Yeah, that's really where they're at right now. Whether they'll be able to maintain that, I'm not so sure. But that's how good of defense they're playing right now. And you can't throw that offensive line out there and expect to be successful.
When did they get rid of NFL Europe? NFL Europe, I'd be like, what, 2004, 2005?
I think it was 09.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. Anyways, the point is, I mean, anytime you run out of a guy who hasn't played center since NFL Europe existed, you're in trouble.
Yeah, you're definitely in trouble, for sure, when you're in that. But here's the thing. No matter what happens, I mean, there's not really an excuse for giving up 10 sacks. And maybe a few of them were on Pryor trying to do too much back there. And I think 9 sacks, you're right. I think they changed one to a run, right?
Right.
I believe that's right. So you were right on 9 sacks because I think they changed one of the sacks on Pryor saying he was trying to run, and they changed that into a negative run of 4 yards. But regardless, I mean, that's way too many sacks.
So much better. Yeah. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. It's way too many sacks to give up, you know, for that offensive line. And, you know, they were as horrible as you can imagine they would be if you were just saying, well, here's the situation. Now, the good news for the Raiders, and this is where we can sugarcoat it a little bit, the good news for the Raiders is hopefully all these guys will be coming back. Who knows how long it will take. I think Veldier can practice. He's eligible to practice, but he's not yet. And the earliest he can return is week 9. Okay, week 9, so that's... this is week 7, so it's 2 more weeks. And you know, that's the earliest he can return. But once he starts practicing, they only have 2 weeks to activate him, which means if he starts practicing next week, he can return in week 9. But my feeling on this is the injury that he had was like a 2 to 3 month injury just for recovery, just for healing, not for any kind of rehab time. That would put, you know, possible practice in that week 9 time frame. So we might have to be back to week 10, week 11.
And, you know, they shouldn't rush him back.
No, they shouldn't.
I'm completely okay with him coming back week 13, week 14, if it comes to that. I mean, whatever they get this year, I think is kind of, you know, playing with house money, unless you're Dennis Allen, where you kind of need the wins. But in the overall big picture, it's not, you know, having him come back and get hurt again and having him, you know, having that impact of next year would be far, far worse than, you know, playing an extra 2 or 3 games without him.
Yeah. And you know what? As far as my understanding goes, and people need to understand this, as far as my understanding goes, that injury does carry risk of re-injury if he comes back too soon.
Yeah, so that's worst case scenario.
Yeah, so you definitely don't want that kind of thing to happen. Because the way that the injury, I mean, just to recap, it's a torn triceps, which is a pretty rare injury except for in, like, football. And people that fall, like old people that fall, I think elderly people that fall. It is like where the number two population group is that. So football players and then old people that fall and brace themselves, the wrong way. But, the torn triceps, the tendon, triceps we think of it as the muscle, but it's actually the tendon, a tendon or the ligament that pulls off the bone. And his was partially torn, which hopefully meant shorter recovery time. But like I said, I don't think they want to rush him back. But what they do is they suture that to the bone. And then they immobilize the arm for a significant period, and the bone has to heal, and everything has to heal up in there. And then after that, you're healed, but the muscles atrophy, just like, you know, any time. And you have to rebuild those muscles. Now, Bell here, I think he can build those up quickly. He'll do everything that they let him do. But you know, if those muscles aren't built up, and then he goes and puts stress on that, you know, that injury again, he definitely carries a possibility of re-injury. And especially, you know, with him being, I think, a centerpiece of the Raiders' long-term future, I don't think they're going to want to rush him back. So it's a big factor. Now, again, we were talking about all the guys that are going to come back. I mean, Pashos, I think Pashos, what his injury was, it's something where they feel like he can come back next week. Menelik Watson, I know that they're hoping he can come back next week. At this point, I don't know if they're just holding out hope or what, because he's just been, you know, such an injury-plagued guy so far. But if they can get Watson and Pashos back, just those two guys, forget Veldir for a second, if they can get those two guys back, they might be in business. Because think of, I mean, do you think they're going to bench Pashos or Barnes at this point?
Nope. You move Barnes inside, probably.
I'm not sure Barnes has ever played left guard, but I would think, especially after how bad Lucas Nix has been, and I think I heard a couple weeks ago that the Raiders internally didn't believe he had been as bad as other people were saying. I'm here to tell you that I've watched the tape. He's been every bit as bad as people have made him out to be. I think they were just trying not to crush his confidence, obviously, because they didn't really have a better option. They didn't really have a better alternative. I mean, Gerard might be an upgrade over him, but, you know, all things considered, maybe you want to get the young guy the reps. But, you know, unfortunately, Lucas Nix, he's just not been very good. And that's been a big problem for the Raiders' offensive line. But if you get Watson and Pashos back, now you're in a situation where, okay, now you, and Wisniewski, okay, obviously Wisniewski, and I'm not sure he's going to be back next week, but the hope is that you get as many of these guys back within a couple of weeks as possible. And if you get Wisniewski back and Watson back and Pashos back, and you don't suffer any other major injuries on that offensive line in the process, then you have a potential, and this is hypothetical. I remember the Raiders' plan was originally to have, you know, Bell here, one of Lucas Nix or Bergstrom at left guard. I think their plan was Bergstrom, actually, and then Nix just kind of performed good enough for them to go the other way, and then Bergstrom got injured too. I think that was a factor. And then Wisniewski, and then at right guard, they were planning on having Barnes and Brizel battle it out, and you know, obviously plans changed because, and then they had planned to have Watson at right tackle. So the plans completely changed with Veldier. That Barnes had to stay at tackle, then he had to flip to the left side. I mean, let's just say, okay, before I get off on that tangent, let's just say for a second that they get all these guys back. You got Watson at left tackle, potentially maybe Barnes moving to left tackle. I think that would be the right move. He can clearly play on the left side. They were already contemplating moving him to right guard. So I think with Nix's performance, I don't think there's any reason why he shouldn't be playing left guard. Stefan Wisniewski at center. Brizel has performed decently well at right guard. Leave him alone and have Pashos play right tackle. I think that's your best starting five.
I agree.
Without Veldier. I mean, I don't think there's any way. Coaches always say, well, we're going to figure out a way to get the best 55, 53 players on the roster, the best 45 players active on game day, the best 22 players on the field. I mean, they love that coaching cliche. But in this case, I think that's really the best five offensive linemen they can put out there. That's the best five they can put out there. But I think you put those five guys out there. Now, we don't know what to expect from Watson yet. He performed pretty well in limited duty in preseason, but, you know, that's preseason football. But I think he has the athletic ability to play left tackle. You know, I think there'll be some growing pains, as with any tackle there would be. But I think if you put those five out there, couldn't be... That looks like the best five possible. And again, I'll go back to them saying, I think they felt like they could hide Nix or Bergstrom next to Veldier. Sandwiched between Veldier and Wisniewski, I feel like they felt like they could hide one of those, the left guard. That could be a weak point for them, and they could hide him a little bit. The Raiders don't run a zone scheme anymore, but they'll still do a lot of double teams at the point of attack, especially in the run game. And guards, typically... left guards especially, are getting, they're not getting the three tech as much. You know what I mean? They're not getting the pass rushing defensive tackle as much. They're either lining up against a 3-4 end, or they're lining up against you know, the one tech is on that side, or they're having to help on a nose or something. So that's the position where I felt like, you know, it made sense. I mean, it makes sense. But I think what's ended up happening is that teams are scheming to exploit Knicks. I noticed that last week the Chiefs did that. The Chiefs brought two defensive backs from the left side. And if you read my article on Bleacher Report this past week, you'll see this. But they brought two defensive backs from the – I'll say it's actually defensive right side, but against Barnes and Knicks. And what that did, if you bring two defensive tackles with Holly on that side, what that forces you to do is it forced McFadden to come over and take one of those guys, first of all. And they were opposite McFadden, so McFadden had to come across the formation to make that block. It forces Barnes now to block a little defensive back, a little speedy defensive back coming off the edge. And now it puts Knicks basically in a one-on-one against Tom Bahali. Now tell me, what happened? Well, Holly got a sack. That's what happened. He went right by Knicks, and Knicks, you know, and you know what, Gerard, at the time Gerard was still in the game, he tried to come over and help, but it was too late because he only was able to kind of get the back of Holly by the time he got over there. Because basically what happened is Holly just pushed Knicks's hands down and went right by him, like just cruised right by him. It almost didn't even have to, you know, wiggle by or anything. And, you know, Holly's not the fastest guy. He's kind of a big guy, too. You know, he's not a speed rusher. He's a technique rusher. And
in theory, you would think Knicks would be able to at least kind of get in his way.
Slow him down, in theory. But Holly is such a good technician. And, you know, he reminds me, if you want to compare him to like Jared Allen, another guy, not the fastest guy, but really good technician. And he'll win. He's going to win with technique. And that's sometimes all it takes to get a sack. I mean, you know, sometimes it's not pure speed off the edge. It's the technique to get around a guy quickly, the strength to get around. But anyway, and we've seen that. I've seen that a little bit where teams have started to scheme against Knicks. They've played a lot of the fronts with the three tech going up against Knicks, which requires the Raiders to give him some help. And that hurts, you know, that hurts the... Then if you bring a blitz up the middle, you know, it causes problems. So, you know, anytime defenses can scheme a certain guy, that's bad news. You know, you need that guy to kind of hold up in that situation. Just Knicks hasn't done it.
And especially when the guys around him aren't...
Yeah, yeah. I don't want to slam on him anymore, but I'm just saying, yeah, the guys around him aren't necessarily the greatest, so it makes it harder to make up for that scheme, you know, for that weakness, because you don't have that help's not coming over real quickly because exactly. That player's got his own, you know, that guy, he's already the other player is kind of overwhelmed himself, you know what I mean, or barely able to hold his own versus his player. It's not a situation where, you know, the center in that case may have, or maybe if it's Wisniewski, he recognizes more quickly that Holly's coming inside and he needs to get over there and help, you know. Instead, Gerard kind of took a step to his right, realized he needed help on his left, and took a step back towards his left. But so, I mean, it's just a situation. I'm not saying I don't like Lucas Nix. I actually did like him draft, and I thought, you know, I honestly thought, you know, based on what I had seen, that he probably was better than Bergstrom at this point. But so far, I think when the Raiders go back and self-scout, I think there's no doubt in their mind that they feel like there's probably something they need to do at that position. They won't be able to do it if they don't get some guys healthy. But I think certainly if they get Pashos and Watson back, they might have that potential. I mean, you know, even if not, you might see a situation where Gerard plays that position.
No, you're right.
You know, so, I mean, offensive line has been a problem, but, you know, in limited snaps, McCants has been okay. You know, he's a guy that definitely, there's a reason he's on the practice squad. He looks like he's got the prerequisite athletic, some of the prerequisite athletic skill that you look for. So I can understand him. I don't think Mady has even played that bad. And so that's why some of the injury things have been a big deal. But when you look at some of it, some of it's flat out been in terms of Knicks and Barnes on the left side, and not that Barnes has been horrible, but I'm just saying some of the offensive line's issues, you know.
There's a difference between being really good and being not horrible. And just because they haven't been horrible doesn't necessarily mean they've been good. And, you know, with a guy like McFadden, you kind of need them to be good creating holes for him.
Yeah, I think run blocking, I mean, we didn't even talk about run block. I think I was, my frame of reference there when I was talking was about pass blocking. But I think when you're talking about run blocking, they need to be better there, too. Because as I've written in the past this year, I think McFadden, of all guys, needs about the hugest holes you can imagine.
Yeah, he does not create for himself very well. Even in the zone scheme, that was true as well. I mean, he's not a shifty, you know, behind the line of scrimmage kind of runner. I mean, he needs the holes.
It's his vision. His vision is suspect. I mean, it just is.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's not to say that McFadden can't be a very good back. I think he can be, but his vision is not very good. He's not a guy that takes every yard on the field on every play. And that's why he didn't fit in the zone scheme, because it pretty much requires the running back to have good vision. What you need, what McFadden needs is, you tell him to go someplace and he goes there. You know, I mean, you know, that's one of the things, and some offensive coordinators like that, because, you know, hey, go this place, it'll work. But you also need a guy that's going to say, okay, I'm going to go this place if it works, but if it doesn't, I'm going to take the cutback. You know, a few guys that come to mind, Frank Gore, Ray Rice, power scheme guys that take cutback lanes when they're there, especially when they're most obviously there. And I think that's where McFadden's a bit frustrating, is because, you know, he doesn't do that. But, you know, I think the offensive line needs to be really good about creating running lanes, and they just haven't been very good doing that.
And I think throughout the entirety of the season, I think that's almost been a bigger problem than the pass rush. I mean, because at least with Pryor, he's been able to negate that a little bit. But, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum on here about, you know, how they cannot, at a conventional running sets, consistently open up lanes and control the line of scrimmage. I mean, their big running plays are coming from the zone read stuff. They cannot line up and just, you know, pound the defense and run the ball. I mean, they just have not been able to do it all season. I think that's been more of an issue than the bad pass blocking.
Yeah, I mean, and I will go back to, I mean, the Raiders' biggest problem this far is the defense. I mean, the offense. And that includes Pryor a little bit. You know, we haven't really
talked about Pryor's game
against the Chiefs. And you can outline probably some of the major issues without even, you know, blinking.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, in the first half, they had the one, you know, long pitch and catch to Denarius Moore for the touchdown. But, you know, he was okay in the first half. I didn't think he was great, but I didn't think he was bad. And, you know, the second half, the wheels just completely fell off for him and the offense in general. But, I mean, you know, especially in the pre-snap part of the game and the mental side of the game, you know, from what we could tell just watching it on TV, it seemed like Pryor, I thought, was a little overwhelmed. We saw at times where they'd have pre-snap penalties where the game clock was running down and you didn't even see Pryor kind of looking up at it. Like, he was still calling signals. There was 2-3 seconds left on the clock. The offensive line obviously had a couple false starts. I mean, it was just in general, it seemed the Raider offense was just kind of overwhelmed in the second half between the crowd noise and, you know, the situation of the game. And I thought Pryor, you know, was a good representation of that. And, you know, I'm not ripping Pryor. I mean, he's still a really young quarterback. People forget this is still his first year as a starter. You know, that's a tough environment for a first-year starter, you know, against a really good defense. And, you know, when you have no offensive line, and for the most part, I mean, in the drop-back part of the game, he's basically out there by himself, you know, in terms of they're not blocking for him. He's always avoiding guys. You know, I thought, you know, he's been the Raider offense, I mean, throughout the first part of the season. And, I mean, they haven't been a great offense, but what they have been able to do has mostly been because of him. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how he recovers from this, because that's really the mark of a good quarterback, is like how, you know, he's been okay. They haven't really played anybody all that great except for Denver. But on defense, they hadn't played, you know, a really great team yet. And now he has. He's struggled. But it'll be interesting to see how he regroups and comes back next week.
Yeah, I think one of the things that the Raider Nation and the Raiders fans have to grapple with a little bit is this is Pryor's audition. you know, we talked about how well he's played. He gives the Raiders options, and he does. I think he still does. But yet, there's still 10 games left. And if Pryor doesn't improve, then, you know, if he's around what he has been so far, that's probably not good enough. You know what I mean? I mean, that's probably not good enough to say, well, if the franchise guy's there, do you take him? You know, if Pryor has only been as good as he has been, you know, if you look at the body of work, Pryor's still got a lot of growth to do. Now, he's got 10 games to do it, and he's come a long way. But I think this past game was definitely a situation where I've been saying that I haven't really seen a breakout game from Pryor or a setback game from Pryor coming into this last week. I just seen slow and steady improvement. I think it's legitimately safe to say we saw a setback game from Pryor last week. And I believe me, I wrote about the offensive line. I know how bad the offensive line was. I realized that. But Pryor, in his own right, had a lot of issues. I mean, I think four false there was four delay of game penalties. It was three false start penalties as well, but there was four delay of game penalties or three delay. I can't remember if it's three or four, but one is the maximum you should ever have.
Right.
You know, that's just too many delay of game penalties. I mean.
And this is anecdotal, but I mean, you know, from watching the game, I mean, I should go back and I should have gone back and looked at it before this, but you know, from the broadcast angle, you know, it looked like on a lot of these delayed games, he was running up to the line, still trying to call plays or make changes with like 2-3 seconds left on the clock, and it was like it was like he wasn't even looking at the shot clock. Or God, I keep saying shot clock. I have the basketball game on the background. He wasn't looking at the 25-second clock, and it's like, you know, you have to, as a quarterback, I mean, that's your number one job, basically, is to get the playoff in time. And, I mean, the fact that he wasn't looking at that kind of indicates to me he was just a little overwhelmed by the moment. The game went a little too quickly for him, which is fine. I mean, he's a young quarterback. That's to be expected, especially in that situation. You know, I'm interested to see how he comes back from it because I don't, you know, I still think right now if the draft was this week, the Raiders would pass up on a quarterback for Pryor, or at least I think that would probably be, I think he's shown enough and he has enough potential, especially athletically, to do that. I don't really, this game didn't change a whole lot for me, but I want to see how he recovers from it, because if he goes into it, you know, the next 2 or 3 weeks, you know, coming off this bad game, if he starts performing poorly and we start seeing these, you know, mental lapses, you know, come back up, that's a really bad sign. Then you have to think about getting a new quarterback. But, you know, if he comes back and he's better, or he's, you know, kind of back where he was, but, you know, he cuts back on some of these mental mistakes, then, you know, you have to say, that's all right. But, you know, for right now, I'm not worried about it, but that was a really bad game for him.
Yeah, it was. It was a bad game. You know, it was a situation where, you know, the delay of games were bad, but, you know, he missed some wide open looks. He bailed out of the pocket early a little too much. Now, I do think that part of the reason that he did that, now, was it a good? No. But I think part of the reason, I think it was part of the Raiders' game plan to have him bail the pocket when, you know, because the Chiefs had some problems with containment in the past, containing quarterbacks. And they're aggressive. They like to threaten the edge. So I think it was part of the game plan. I think they kind of told Pryor, hey, if they get around the edge, go. You know, and I think the Chiefs handled that really well, obviously. You know, and so I think that was part of the game plan. But at the same time, I think Pryor, you know, he, it was a lot of things. I mean, there's a delay of game penalties. He missed some open reads, open receivers. And I'm not talking deep plays. I'm talking about short underneath guys. When he bailed the pocket early, he tried to run a few times when he should have just thrown the ball away. You know, it took a loss on the play. He did that a couple times. And so these are things where you're like, ah, all the bad Pryor stuff came out in this game. You know, we go back to the play clock. I mean, even when he was getting the snap off, 1 second, 2 seconds, defense knows the snap is coming. So they're ready to go. I mean, the clock gets one, there's anticipation that they can get off that much faster.
Right.
You know, and
they were really slow coming out of the huddle too.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of there was a lot of things where you're like, oh, what's going on here? Like, why is this, you know, why is this happening? And you have to go back to prior. I mean, getting in and out of the huddle, getting up to the line quickly. And I was telling you about this a little bit while we were prepping for the show, but, you know, a quarterback in a hostile environment like that, get the play call quick. Get up to the line quick. Then calm yourself a little bit because it's going to be loud. You know what I mean? Right. You have to get your wits about you. You have to read the defense and understand what's going to happen. And I think a couple times, there was one play where it was a cover two look that was pre-snap. It looked cover two pre-snap, but then the Chiefs rotated down into a cover one, and that was Marcus Cooper's pick, his interception. And, you know, a quarterback like Pryor, he needs to be able, you know, quarterbacks need to be able to recognize when that coverage shifts and then know where to go with the ball. He didn't recognize it, and he threw the interception because it was an additional guy in the box that wasn't supposed to be there, you know, based on the pre-snap look. If you have more time at the line of scrimmage, maybe you get the guy to show early. You know, Peyton Manning, if you look at Peyton Manning, he's the best quarterback on the planet right now, right? You go look at Peyton Manning. What does he do? He gets a team to the line of scrimmage. He looks at everything. He gets to the line, you know, does a bunch of hijinks at the line of scrimmage. Sometimes defense shows their blitz or rotates their coverage early. Or sometimes even he sees the body stance of that particular player. Ah, he's in a he's showing me something with his body that shows me that the coverage is going to shift. And he recognizes that, changes the play, and gets into a play that's more favorable. Or sometimes he's just like, I recognize it. I know where to go with the ball on this play. You know, maybe he doesn't really change the play. It's all just for show. But he's getting the defense to show him something that they don't want to show him just so he can get an upper hand. And that's why getting to the line of scrimmage late like that is such bad news, because it didn't give Pryor time to process what he was seeing. And a young quarterback, he needs as much time as possible. And so that was really a tough game for Pryor. It was a setback game that we haven't seen. And I disagree with you a little bit on, well, if the draft was right now, the Raiders wouldn't select a quarterback. I think it would depend on what quarterback was available.
Yeah,
because this is why I say that. A lot of people haven't been making this point, but I think Pryor's been good, and I don't think the Raiders should be in a rush to look at a quarterback. But Pryor right now is still totally reliant on his running game, and the big concern with running quarterbacks is still injuries, and you can't have your quarterback getting injured that much. And so that's a factor that has to play into your mind when you're drafting and when you're considering a quarterback. And right now, if we're just looking at what Pryor has done today, he's played 5 games out of the possible 6, so he's already missed a game. He's had 1 bad game, I would call it. He's had another. He has probably had 3. You know, 3 average games, and maybe 1 of the games you could quantify as being a good game or above average game. And if you want, maybe being generous, maybe you say 2 or 3 of the games have been above average. But the point is that what you want as a franchise quarterback? The answer is no. So if you can get a guy in the draft that is no doubt in your mind, no question, you know, a franchise quarterback, you do it at this point.
Yeah, I think my counter argument would just be that he hasn't had hardly anything to work with, especially in the running game and offensive line. So I think you have to factor that in, yeah, too. But I agree with you in that, you know, if they're sitting there, let's say they finish, I don't know, 4-12, they end up with the 4th or the 5th pick, and somehow Bridgewater's sitting there. Probably won't be, but let's just say he is.
Mariota.
Yeah. I mean, I tend to think Bridgewater is the best quarterback right now in this class. And I like him because he's, you know, he can run, but he's really a pocket passer. And I like that a lot, yeah, about him. I think he can make all the throws. But, I mean, we could talk about Mariota too. But, I mean, if Bridgewater's there when you're picking, I think you have to probably go Bridgewater there. And Mariota, probably, you're right. Probably Mariota as well.
I think if either of those two guys are there right now, based on what we've seen so far, obviously college, you know, things can change. But based on what we've seen so far, I would say, yes, the Raiders would have to go with one of those guys if they're sitting there. Assuming that Clowney's not there.
Yeah.
Because I think a guy like Clowney is a guy that they really, really need as well.
Well,
then maybe you can make a case the other way.
Right.
So if that's the case. Now,
because in the scenario I was talking about, you would assume the Giants finish ahead of them. And I think the Giants are the ideal Clowney team if he's there when they're picking. Like, I'd be shocked if they passed him up unless they trade Eli or something. So, but yeah, I agree. If the Clowney's there, that's probably what they have to do.
Yeah. You know, on that. But I think if you look at, okay, they got Watson. They'll probably re-sign Veldier. They got a ton of money. They'll re-sign Veldier, most likely.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think he's part of their long-term future. I think they believe that as well. But if you take, you know, if you, you know, look at what free agents are available next year, you know, you look at all these different things, and you have to say, you know what, I mean, who else are they going to draft if they're in that top? I mean, sometimes you just take the elite guy that's there. You know, here's the thing. Here's the other thing I say. And my counter argument to your counter argument is this: if you have a chance to draft an elite guy, regardless of position, truly elite player, and you don't, you're an idiot.
Yeah,
that's where that best player available bullcrap strategy, that's where it really comes in. If, for example, Let's go back to some recent history, okay? The St. Louis Rams, number 2 overall pick 2 years ago. What do? They trade a boatload out of number 2 pick. They get a boatload of picks for Robert Griffin III. Okay? Just a ton of picks.
Yeah.
And you have to ask yourself, was it worth it? Was that amount of picks worth it? And really, I could make a case on both sides that they both were worse off with the trade. Because I think that you don't put enough guys around a guy like, even like Robert Griffin III, and you're going to struggle a little bit. They might be okay, but they're going to struggle a little bit. And you're seeing them struggle this year, especially with his injury. And he's still, you know, starting to come back around, but the defense is so bad. And they haven't had the picks to replenish that defense. And then you look at the Rams, and the Rams, they didn't have a truly franchise quarterback. They had a guy kind of like Pryor, who they thought was, you know, good enough in Sam Bradford, and who really isn't a franchise quarterback. And so are they better off with all those picks? No, because they still need a franchise quarterback.
Wasn't Bradford on his rookie deal, though? Because didn't that factor into it, because he was still on that huge contract, and then you would have had two big contracts on quarterbacks?
Well, I mean, a big contract on quarterback in the draft now is not a big deal.
Right, but I mean, it's still a, you know, a good-sized deal to put in, you know, to have the quarterback position.
Bradford's money, but look at it, that's true, but that's a poor way to make decisions, because that's what you call sunk cost. They've already paid him that.
Right.
I mean, they've already given him that contract. They whatever the amount of money that they've sunk into Bradford, they've sunk into Bradford. You know,
But I think that factors into it, given how many picks they got. Because, I mean, I will say, they did get an unbelievable deal from the Redskins. I mean, I get that RG3 is, you know, and coming out was one of these high, you know, one of the highest graded quarterbacks there's been. But, I mean, that was really an unbelievable deal that they got in terms of the picks that they got.
Yes, they did. They get a lot. But here's my counterpoint. That was for RG3. There's no guarantee the Raiders are going to get such a good deal.
Yeah.
You know, say the Raiders are up there at 4. Say the Raiders are at 4, and somehow magically, you know, one of those two quarterbacks falls, right? Hold on a second. Excuse me, I've been sick now. Okay, excuse me. But say one of those quarterbacks, say the Raiders are at 4, you know, and one of those quarterbacks is there. Is there any guarantee the Raiders are going to be able to trade out of that spot for such a premium position? For such a premium amount? You know, I'm not so sure. Now, I'm not saying any of this is going to work. We're talking hypotheticals here.
Yeah.
My point is only that prior today, is a running quarterback that, like it or not, is going to have a greater risk of injury. He's not yet at a franchise level, and you need him to get there, or think he's going to get there.
And you also have to factor in, you know, the organization hasn't shown a ton of confidence in him up until this point. I mean, now he's been the starter, and obviously it's clear that he's, you know, the best guy on the team right now. But, I mean, you know, up until this year, I mean, they were planning to have Matt Flynn play ahead of him, and then we saw how that, you know, how Matt Flynn turned out. So, I mean, you know, I wonder almost, too, if the Raiders, you know, don't want a running quarterback for whatever reason, I mean, injuries and stuff. I wonder if that would factor into it. I mean, it seems like they haven't been super, super, you know, they haven't defended him a ton, I don't think, and they haven't been super confident in him. So, I mean, I think that probably factors in as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, if running quarterback, here's the thing with the running quarterback. If you're going to have one, you need a damn good backup.
Yes.
And you need, if you're going to do it.
You need Kirk Cousins if you're going to
do it. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people.
You know what I mean? You need that kind of guy, though. Like, somebody who's thought of around the league as possibly being, you know, a starter at some point.
Right, and if you're going to continue, the other thing is if they're running quarterback and you're going to continue to have them to run a lot, you need a guy that's kind of similar behind him.
Right.
Which, you know, there's only so many guys that are like that. Which is why, if you look across the league, Robert Griffin and Colin Kaepernick are not running as much this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a coincidence, folks. It's because there's that risk. If you don't have a great, and guess what? The Redskins do have Kirk Cousins. And they're still not letting Robert Griffin run as much.
Right.
And they're not, you know, and then Colin Kaepernick, they're not having him run as much. Russell Wilson never really ran that much. He's more been a scrambler. But the point remains that you just don't have him run as much. Now, you know, Cam Newton has been able to be healthy. You know, and he's bigger, like Pryor is. Bigger, built tough.
Built for tough.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of those things that you have to figure in. I mean, maybe Pryor won't be as prone to injury. But any time, I think there's increased risk there no matter what. You need to have a good backup. My point is only, if you're looking at right now, based on the six games, and you're saying, and you're looking at Pryor as a quarterback, and remove his running ability just for a second. I'm not saying you do that overall, but remove his running ability and look at him as a quarterback.
Long way
and then
to go.
Say, yeah, long term, is this a guy that, well, we can ratchet back some of his running ability, his rushing ability, and the offense will continue to be as good as it will be? The answer right now is no. They need his rushing ability. They need that to be part of his game right now. He's not quite that. I'm not saying he can't get there, and I like the improvement. He's got 10 games, and this is why I was saying he's got 10 games. By the end of the season, the Raiders have to be pretty confident that he's going to continue to improve, and he's ready to take that next step. Other factors: he's only got one more year left on his deal. Okay.
Yeah.
Pryor does. If he does prove that he's a franchise quarterback next year, say he does, you have to pay him like one at the end of next year. Okay, that's a factor, okay? Franchise quarterback, if he's proven that he's a franchise quarterback by then, and you have to pay him like one at the end of next year, that's a lot of coin, okay? Mm-hmm. Most teams that have these franchise quarterbacks that are giving them these big contracts are doing so already with a good base of talent, okay? A very good base of talent. The teams weren't built, in other words. Look at the teams that have done it. The Ravens. Now, I don't think they should have given Flacco that money, but the Ravens were already built, okay? This is a team that is building from they're starting from a better place than the Raiders, just to begin with. You know, Brady, Breeze, Aaron Rodgers, Matt Ryan, okay? All these guys are getting big deals. Why are they getting big deals? Because the team's already built around them, okay? And you know what your costs are going to be. Now, if you give Pryor a big deal at the end of next year and the team isn't quite over the hump yet, are you going to be able to have the money to go out and get the team over the hump? And I know the Raiders are draft and develops, blah, 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 blah. But my point is you, do you have that money to go out and spend if you need to get over the hump? If you don't draft that well and you need to supplement with free agents, do you have that money? You know, I'm not sure. The teams that are in best situation right now to be good for a long period of time are the teams that have quarterbacks that are working on these rookie deals because of the wage scale the way that it is. Russell Wilson, you know, Kaepernick. These guys that are playing on these deals, they're the ones that their teams have a lot more money to be flexible, you know, and to build up the talent base in the draft because they're set. There's a lot of factors you have to consider in when you're building a team. And I'm ready to set that prior, hey, maybe if I, we got 10 games left. If 10 games go by and I still like, I'm not so sure about, like, we're still feeling this way. We're still having setback games or whatever. Then you can legitimately say, I'm not so sure that the Raiders don't go quarterback. If one of those franchise guys, absolute, no question, no doubt, not about it, franchise guys is there. Or Clowney's not there. However, you go to, you know, if you go to the fact that, okay, Pryor's progressed a lot, then yeah, then that gives you flexibility. I still think in that point, if that becomes the situation, then you maybe trade down, try to get those picks back, try to rebuild faster. Because you're going to need to do that if you're going to have to end up paying Pryor at the end of next year. Like, very calculated. It's all very important for the Raiders' long-term future. But the biggest thing they need to do is they needed to give full confidence this year, 10 games worth, and then, you know, and then let next year kind of be next year. You know, obviously I think Reggie McKenzie's got a long-term plan, but I don't think he even knows, okay, we're absolutely going to go this way or that way at this point. There's a lot of scouting to be done. There's a lot of self-scouting to be done with Pryor, and that's a factor. So there's a lot that goes on in this situation, but, you know, overall, you know, I'm not ready to say that. I like what I've seen, but a setback against the Chiefs, a Chiefs defense like this, I think it certainly gives you a little bit of a pause to say, you know what, let's have the next few games. How he rebounds, as you put it, how he rebounds is going to be very important.
Yep.
Now, the Steelers are not a great team this year, but Dick LeBeau is a great defensive coordinator, and you can bet your on the fact that he's going to do some things to try to frustrate a young quarterback like Pryor. He's still young. He's still got time. But realistically, he's only got 10 games to really prove to the Raiders. And I think through six games, I don't think he's quite proven that. But it's a cumulative thing, and he's got time.
Yeah, I agree. So let's wrap this up. We have other things, but we'll get to them next week. You know, we've already gone 52 minutes, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Any plugs for this week?
Talked about. So go check that out. I posted that earlier this week on Bleacher Report. You can check that out. I don't know if I have anything else for Raiders related this week just because it's a bye week. I'm sure I'll have something kind of maybe into next week on something, but we'll have another podcast next week. We'll talk about we'll talk a rookie stock report or talk about some players that are struggling or doing.
Yeah, I think we'll go through the rookies and the
et cetera. We'll do that.
Yeah, I'll go through the rookies and some first-year players and stuff, and then we'll preview the Steeler game. So we'll have a good show for you next week as well. Sure.
So you guys can expect that next week. I think that'll be a good podcast leading into next week after the bye week because we'll have a game to recap. So I think it'll be good next week. So definitely, if you listen this week, listen next week. Tell your friends too. Keep that in mind as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And be sure to follow both of us on Twitter. I am at T Armosino, Armosino. He is Chris Hansen with an E, NFL. Somebody asked today, and I realized I don't think I've been plugging him as much on the podcast, so be sure to check us out there, at T Armosino, at Chris Hansen. We will talk to you guys next week. Thanks, Chris.
All right, see ya.